I tell people all the time, if you want to get started speaking, one of the easiest ways to do that is to write, because you're proving to people that you can carry a thought from beginning to end with points.
Welcome to the Passion Behind the Art Show. It's all about diving in with individuals to learn the story behind their passion. It's your host, Daryl Pena.
It's another week, another amazing guest, and another opportunity for me to bring you value through someone else's story. So without further ado, let's jump into this week's episode.
Well, I'm excited to have Daniel Evans on the Passion Behind the Art Show, a.k.a. Marmalade Blue.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Well, Daniel, let's jump right into it. How did your creative journey start?
Woo! Okay. We could go really far back and talk about being a little kid. When I was a little kid, I used to color, and I would only color in blue objects and food. That was just a thing I did as a child. And I think that's amazing. Kind of like we were talking right before we started, the idea of sometimes you premeditate what you're going to do. And it's really just like following that inclination because it's leading you somewhere. So on top of that, when I was young, we didn't have money growing up. And so a lot of the things that we would do for fun would be food-based. So having fun at our house was like making cookies, candy and snacks, and making like maps and things out of food. And that was also how I would kind of differentiate myself in school. Instead of doing a paper, I would do like a giant cookie map or a giant recreation. And it's so weird because you, again, don't think about this stuff. You're just like, oh, I'm a little kid having a good time. But I did that so often. Like people came to expect like, oh, Danielle's giving her project. Where is it? Where's the thing she's going to eat? And I truly debated when I took French in high school. I thought to myself, well, maybe I want to be a chef instead, because that's where I started learning about non, like, middle class boxed food. Even though I have, like, my grandfather was an Italian immigrant and came over here when he was young, like, because he was a man, he wasn't ever in the kitchen. That was just not how things were. So the pasta making and the growing of the vegetables and all of that was kind of lost on him, which is really sad. But yeah, like growing up, I started understanding the nuance behind eating and the fact that all kinds of different people have the experience of eating, thankfully, because it's a necessity. But there are all kinds of ceremonies and rituals and things like that associated. And even the lack of food has a lot of meaning for people as well, whether that's fasting or starving or whatever. And so I started looking at what that meant and realizing there was a story there, but I didn't know how to tell it. So I went to school as an illustrator, where I learned to tell stories. Mm-hmm. Midway through college, found design and went, oh, design is really interesting to me because it involves typography and language. And I thought this whole lettering thing was a really interesting idea because it essentially was the illustration qualities that I had without the character design issues that I lacked. So that's kind of where my background started. And inevitably, I found myself graduating during the housing crisis, which is a terrible time to be in the arts. And especially coming out of like a lower to middle class background.
Yeah. All right. So you graduate from school.
Yeah.
You're trying to find a job in probably the worst time ever for a creative. Like, so what did you do? Did you still try or did you just go to do something else?
I was dejected and I worked at the mall.
Wow.
I eventually got a job. I got a job at a sandwich shop, and it's where I learned how to deal with people from other like cultures and backgrounds and all of those things. Like a lot of my coworkers were Egyptian and Mexican and Lebanese. And it was just really cool to be like, oh, these are the people that everybody hates on right now. Like these are the people that are working really hard and doing the jobs that no one wants to do. It's amazing how great they are. And I was going to quinceañeras and to people's homes for holidays. And it was like a really beautiful experience. So I learned like, oh, there's so much value to these people that you don't see their stories told. You hear about them in general, and the things that people have to say are not gracious. So that's kind of what I think really stoked empathy for me, is being like, wow, this is a hard job for me, being educated and being white. Like, I can't imagine what it's like doing this and not even being from here, and the way that people are going to treat you based on your background. Like, that's awful. So from there, I ended up working at the mall, and that's where I learned how to sell. Like, most of being a creative person is figuring out how to sell your stuff. And I learned that business was not merely taking advantage of people, because I feel like the way that people handle business sometimes is like, I'm going to take advantage of you. I'm going to give you some garbage. I'm going to charge you a lot of money, and I'm going to run away before you can catch me.
Yeah, it's true. And, the salesman.
I hated it. I'm like, I don't want to be this. This sounds gross. And I realized that there's a way to do good business. Like, if you do hard work and you put your soul into it and you try to give people what they need, you can do anything. Like, truly, so many doors can open for that. And essentially, I started playing around with typography because I was sad and tired of working at the mall. Mm. And I realized if I was going to tell people I was an illustrator or a designer, I should probably have a website.
You should go for it.
There was a lot of like crying in the parking lots, and, you know, crying on the way to work, and crying in the bathroom, and just being like, I can't believe I went to school and I have all these loans, and everybody at the loan company knows me by name, and I can't pay it back.
Oh my.
You know, wow. I find that's not an uncommon story, but it just being pushed to desperation caused me to think about, like, okay, what do I do to be happy? Like, clearly trying to do what I think is going to make me money, which is like weird design of pamphlets and websites that I'm not good at. Like, this is not going to help me. This is not going to improve my life. What do I do? And I realized I needed to follow internally, like, my heart. That sounds really dumb and impractical. But as it turns out, again, like I said, if you are kind of paying attention to yourself and to your inclinations, like, those things are trying to lead you to where you're supposed to go. So that's ultimately what I ended up doing, was like starting working with my hands. I was doing lettering. I realized I wasn't pixel perfect. I think a lot of people get caught up in, oh, well, everybody's doing this. They're on the computer. They're making really snappy, clean work, and that just wasn't me. I'm not a vector person. And so I thought, okay, how do I shift this? How do I make this better for myself? And I realized it was to start using my hands. So from there, I was like, oh, I'm going to start building with objects. And then it occurred to me that, like, the food I have in my house can serve double duty. It can, you know, make pretty art, and then I'll just scrape it back in the bag and eat it later. And I started posting it on the internet. And as it turns out, that was a brave new thing. And people were like, whoa, this is awesome. This looks so cool. Oh my gosh, what is this? How'd you do it? And it just caught. It just caught like wildfire. Yeah.
It's funny how, like, in every stage, like, you weren't joking. Like, it's either you couldn't leave food alone or food could leave you alone. It was just like, in every stage, you were like drawn to food in some way, shape, or form.
Yeah. Yes. And it's weird too, because as I started playing with it in terms of food and object, like in terms of lettering, I'm like, oh, if we use this like a medium, like paint or a pencil, it communicates its own inherent meaning. Like, certain kinds of food come from certain backgrounds. They have certain connotations. Like, some things are sexualized. Some things are political. Some things are like regional. So there's all kinds of different messages that you're communicating through this. And it's not just, oh, I'm going to make a literal food thing for a food company. Sometimes it's, I'm going to make this thing and it's going to convey freshness for a health and beauty magazine. I'm going to convey power and it'll work for an automotive magazine. I'm going to convey wealth and hospitality, and that will work for an entertainment industry thing. And so it has been like this beautiful way to draw metaphors and make connections between seemingly unrelated objects and ideas. And so I'm finding, through this process, I'm also doing that with people. So, like, bringing together photographers and videographers and stylists and other people to help me make these things, like, I'm pulling people in that otherwise wouldn't necessarily come together for a gig. Like, making for a music video, but not for a shoot like this. And that's where some of this magic comes from, is like hybrid thinking, producing something new.
Because technically, like, you're doing a full-blown production. Like, when you think about it, you're either building a set or some way, shape, or form, you're doing a production.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
So my question is, how did you manage to come out of this funk? Like, you come out of school, you realize that it's super hard for a creative right now. You're at the sandwich shop working. Like, how did you know you didn't go to school for this? You're in loans. How did you come out of this?
It took a handful of steps, really. Like, I remember having like several very specific steps along the way. And when I kind of hit them, I realized, huh, weird. I think this means something, but I don't know what that means yet. So one of the things I learned was celebrating my peers. So my peers were getting jobs in different places. They were becoming like the town graphic designer. They were moving to New York City. And I was upset because I thought, like, why am I not doing these things? And I realized, like, they have their journeys. Like, my friends that became the town graphic designer became the town graphic designer for the rest of their careers. They're going to be working 20 years in the middle of Indiana at the same place, doing a lot of the same stuff, and that's what they want. And it's like, that's okay. That's their journey. My friends that moved to New York, some of them became really well-known and are very successful, and others moved back to smaller towns and are doing something else, and that's part of their journey. That's fine. So I think there's like a component of, you kind of like just let everybody do their thing and just celebrate along the way that they're making moves, whatever those moves are.
Right.
So that's like one of them. And there's a level of self-confidence that comes from that space, being like, you know, I don't have to make the same moves as someone else. I can make my own moves, and those moves are enough. Like, that's good. So it's been kind of like that space, and then allowing myself to really jump into doing what I loved, like the things that made me happy. I felt like I spent so much time to trying to do what I should do or what I thought would make money versus what is something I'm drawn to. If I do a thing that I really love, people will love it too. How do I show people that I love what I'm doing? And that helped a lot. You know, that really guided me, because I think when we connect to that part of ourselves, like, other people get excited about it.
Cool.
Yeah.
I think sometimes we just kind of forget that people are drawn to passion.
Yeah.
And it's not so much, you know, of course we want to produce quality work and stuff like that, but I feel like when someone could feel something or get that passion or that energy from you in what you're doing, that's really probably one of the greatest drawers.
Yeah. And I think there's even like something to be said about being impassioned, like angry. Like, I'm learning that recently, that it can be healthy and helpful to be polarizing, because in some regard, like, you're kind of cutting off the dead brush and lighting fire to that and being like, if you're not feeling me, you don't have to hang. And that's cool. That's cool. But then the people who want to hang with you are like, hey, I really want to hang with you. Like, I dig what you're doing. And I have seen many designers of note doing that sort of thing. And it's scary because you're like, oh, I'm cutting off like streams, or I'm cutting off things that I could be using or useful. But you realize like a lot of those streams aren't really giving anything to you. You're just holding them because you think someday they might.
That's true.
And it's important to, like, again, be true to what it is that you're doing, because what you're doing is guiding you somehow. So
makes sense. Yeah. This makes sense. And plus, it's a great filter.
Yes. Yeah, I think everybody needs that. And I think we all come up, especially in this very turbulent time, you know, like politically and socially and all of these things, like whenever someone starts to get louder about their opinions, it starts to be met with some feelings.
Right, just, right.
I think it's important to be able to present those feelings in a respectful, dignified way, but it's the internet. So regardless of how you put those things out there, someone's
Yeah, I mean, but what can you say? It's just one of them things, like, your job is just to put it out there, really, at the end of the day, and then let whoever wants to interpret. You can't really, as I said, control what you can control.
Yeah. And I mean, that's very much, again, if you're impassioned and you're putting something out there, there's a level of confidence being like, this is what I mean. This is what matters. This is what I care about. And you can hang or not. Like, that's the reality. You can hang or not.
And to be honest, like, for you to be at that point, I mean, that's a big deal, because I think if anything, that's what everyone struggles with. It's like, when I put this out there, am I going to get the right reaction? Mm-hmm. I don't want to leave anyone out. Am I going to be able to draw the masses? You know what? Yes. And I feel like that's what everyone, for the most part, struggles with.
Yeah, is the being true to yourself. It's tricky because there are so many external factors, you know? There are external motivators like money and social power and just getting along and forging peace and all that stuff. Like, all of that's really important. Like, that can't be discounted. But it is tricky to be like, okay, are these things aligning with who I am?
Right.
Am I becoming the truest version of who I need to be? Am I becoming the best version of myself? Like, yeah, it's hard calls. It's really hard calls, but I'm here to celebrate my friends doing it. Like,
and I think I like that, because I feel like for me personally, that's when everything changed for me. It's like just celebrating everyone else.
Yeah.
Like, just forgetting about and just focus on celebrating. It's like one of the most freeing feelings ever.
Yeah, exactly. Because it's like somebody, you're not dimming your own light by like celebrating someone else. Like, you're really doing it right. You know, when you give to that, like, it's giving back to you. It's really beautiful. Yeah,
it's true. So yeah. What would you say was the hardest thing that you had to overcome through the journey?
Oh God. Which time?
It's your call. I mean, it's your call.
Oh my God.
I don't know if you want to go, you know, top two, top three, or you just want to give one.
Oh, sir. All right. I'll give you a couple of hard things I've had to do in the last couple years. The last couple years have been really hard for me. And in some cases, I've had to step off my business a little bit so I could deal with myself. And that was a very difficult decision in and of itself. That's maybe number three, is making the call to take some time to get myself right. Like, I went through a divorce, I went through a near-death experience, I've had this long-standing kind of like issue of someone copying my work and taking some of my jobs, and all of those things cause stress, and they cause different kinds of stress, and they cause different stressors in various parts of your person. And so when you're feeling some component of these simultaneously, you gotta figure out, like, I'm feeling lost, I'm feeling pulled, there's a lot of noise, how do I quiet this so I can think? And so for me, I made a decision in 2016 to kind of take a little bit of time off. So I took like 3 months off, and that was really scary. That was so scary. Because really I was like, am I going to end up moving? Like, how am I going to live? Like, what is going to happen to me? What is going to happen? It was really rough. And so I decided to let myself travel. I hadn't ever really done that unless it was for work. And growing up, I had been on a plane once at the age of 9, and I was like never again. We just didn't have money for that. And so I thought, I've always wanted to go somewhere that didn't involve my job. I've got a little bit of money saved back. I'm going to start traveling a bit. And so I would do that to get out of my home and to just be alone. I'd never solo traveled just for the joy of seeing other places. And I realized how freeing that was and how much I enjoyed being by myself. And I think I needed that kind of quiet to figure out moves with work and how to like be right again while all of these things were buzzing around me. I had to come to grips with the fact that I was using my job to validate my existence. I think we do a lot of validation through different things, whether it be like being a family man or like being involved in religious communities or being this person who has this thing that they do for work. Like, we are constantly looking for exterior motivators to tell us that we are important and valued, and that if we die, that someone will miss us. And really, we need to be able to do that for ourselves. And that's really hard. So that was a pretty massive journey, is just kind of letting myself do that.
Wow. So like, where were some of the places that you went?
I went to Denver a couple times. I did a road trip with one of my college best friends. We went from Seattle. We drove to San Francisco in like a day and then slowly made our way back up the coast over the course of a week. Went to Toronto, went nice. To Chicago. Yeah, just a couple. I went to New York to visit friends, stay with them, and just like spend some time just being somewhere else, because nothing will really tell you about yourself more than being in another environment where you're like alien to it, you know?
Yeah, that's true. I'm with you on that, especially if you like go somewhere where it's like completely not what you're used to.
Where have you gone that like you feel out of your element?
Where have I went that I felt out of my element? Not really. I'm not sure if anywhere that I felt like I wasn't out of my element. But in general, I like to travel. I like to just learn different cultures. I like to, you know, and that's something that I want to give to my kids, because I feel like there's not even school can't give
right.
them that.
Yeah.
Like just realizing different experiences. Like not everyone has it like how it is in America.
Right.
Not everyone has it like how it is where you are in America.
Yeah.
So, but I've been to a few states. I wasn't even born in the country. So, you
Where
know, I was born in Jamaica.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, I was born in Jamaica. So, you know, I've already experienced what it's like being outside of the U.S. So being able to kind of show my kids that, that's kind of a big deal, because I feel like everything is just so different outside of the U.S. And then on top of it, in the U.S. itself, like New York and Georgia is like two different places.
Yeah, they're like
two different countries. And then on top of it, living in New York, because I grew up in New York, upstate New York, and the boroughs of New York is like two different countries in itself.
Yeah.
So it's just like, you know, so when you said you went different places, I was just like, my eyes lit up, because I feel like, if you want to really learn something, and especially, as you said, about yourself, go somewhere different from what you're used to.
Yeah, exactly.
And you will see your true self come out.
I was in Vegas for a conference for Adobe Max that year, and I happened to be there on my anniversary, like my old wedding anniversary, and it was like the year after my husband and I split up, and just dealing with the fallout of that, and I thought, oh, man. Was this wise to be somewhere? Should I have just stayed at home and cried? No, I should have been somewhere else. But I'm in Vegas, which is not necessarily a place I want to go visit. It's just not my favorite city. It's really commercial, loud, and all of these things. And I lost my wallet in Vegas.
Wow.
And I'm looking around for hours, and I'm just like, I got to make a decision. If I don't go right now, I'm going to miss my flight, but I have to go through like 2 hours of questioning because I just can't find it. And it was up to me to figure this out. And I felt very strongly that my wallet was nearby. And I go to this spot and I think to myself, yell out if someone has found your wallet. And I was like, no, don't do that. That's crazy. Yell out if someone's found your wallet. And I'm like, no, don't do that. It's crazy. So I hop, I call a Lyft and I ask it to take me back to my hotel to check out and grab my bags. And I'm just going to start this 3-hour process of getting checked in and hopefully making it to the airport. And so I'm like, to my Lyft driver, I'm like, I'm trying to call my bank and the bank isn't open to close my car. It's like, he's like, it's going to be cool. It's going to be cool. And this guy was just so kind to me. Like, he waited for
wow.
me. I tipped him an astronomical amount of money for like all of this stuff. And as we're going, I get a phone call from my agent being like, hey, someone found your cards. They've been looking for you. They found me. And they have your wallet. They want to get it to you. And it was this family, and they drove the wallet to the airport for me. And I just sobbed, because I was like, I'm in a city where people are like, everybody says Vegas is like where den of iniquity is and liars, thieves, and like the mafia hang out here. And all of these people were just rallying around me to help me on a day that was very significant for me. And it was such a beautiful experience to travel and be pleasantly surprised by who was there and who I was running into, who I was attracting. That was good.
That must have been something, just to kind of... that must have been something. I could just imagine.
Just in the back of this list, I'm like, it was my anniversary today, and people are so beautiful.
So on that note, who would you say were some of the people that kind of held you together through these various testing and hard times? Who would you say were some of those people?
Surprisingly, not a lot of people from the design industry. Like, there were some, but not any that most would know or have names. Like, I think what was so beautiful is, like, soft people came to me and they would check on me. They would, you know, call me, they would hear me out, and they would share their issues with their own relationships and how they've struggled. And in some cases, how they made it, and in some cases, how they ended. Like Lenny Terenzi was really helpful. Roger King, Alicia was absolutely lovely. Tara Victoria Ludgate. God, there were just wonderful people that sat with me and just spoke with me. Sid Weiler was wonderful. Shauna Panchezin, just lovely, lovely human beings, people I'm so grateful to. And then there were so many people from my personal life that were great. Like, I have two friends. I call them my two moms. They're married in Pacific Northwest, and they just are living that very hippy-dippy life. And they're constantly like, how's your spirit? They're like, do you want me to do a spirit animal reading for you? And I'm like, oh my God. Sure. Okay. Like, those kinds of people. And everyone was just so, so beautiful. Like, so gentle with me and kept urging me, like, you don't have to do anything. You don't have to overextend yourself to other people right now. You just have to figure yourself out. And I am so grateful for them, because without them, I just don't think that I would have made it. One of my best friends, just a lovely man and human being, just would sit with me and let me talk through some of this stuff. One of my other very good friends, a tech guy in San Francisco, would just sit and talk with me and try to be very logical and rational. It was just so beautiful to see how, like, these people from different backgrounds each had something to share with me, whether their own experience or just their framework of how the world works. And it was extremely helpful. And I think there came a point where there was so much of other people's opinions swimming around that eventually I had to be like, okay, thank you for your thoughts. This is now up to me to make decisions about my own life. And that became a very personal journey forward. Yeah, it was good.
That's cool. I mean, it's just, you know, just hearing, you know, you share all of this, it's just like, I'm always thinking of, like, the other side of the spectrum, like, to have that versus going through all of this alone.
Yeah.
It's just like, that's such a blessing, you know. Yeah. It's just, you know, to just have people that can take you through whatever you're going through versus, yeah, like, literally not having anyone.
Yes. And I think it requires something of you in a vulnerable state to beget vulnerability, like, to put that out there first. And there were even people that I met, like Tina Esmaker, I met at this time, and we found out that our marriages ended 2 days apart from each other. And we were basically living the same lives, and we were introduced by mutual friends going, hey, you guys are having a time. And it was just beautiful because I sat down with her and she's like, oh, I've got like 40 minutes. We can talk. And then we sat for 3 hours. And then she was like, do you want to hang out again before you go? And I'm like, yeah, let's figure this out. I mean, it was so lovely to meet people in that process that were trying to become and to evolve, to grow, rather than to be sad and close in on themselves. And I feel like we have a choice always at every juncture to either open a little or close a little, open a little or close a little. And we pick and choose when that's appropriate, and we get different results. But I try to be open as much as possible. Open. I just see that as being more beneficial. I don't know. It's a personal choice, but that helps.
Yeah, I mean, I would just say, like, especially if you're going through something, of course, there's going to be a process. There's going to be a time where, because everyone, when they're going through something, their time, there's a time that they have alone. And usually it's in the night when they're alone,
yes,
in their room. That's usually the time when it hurts the most, when it's the emotions are flowing the most. But I believe that when you're going through something, you should let someone else know, because it's like so scary, and it's because our mind and our emotions are so powerful that it could just take us to some places,
yeah,
and usually it's not a positive place.
Correct.
It's not usually a positive place. Yeah. So to kind of let people in to kind of feed you with some light is very important, because there will be that time when you are alone and you will just have to face it. It's just inevitable. But to, yeah, kind of get the balance helps. You can't just be alone all the time.
Right.
Because then there will be no balance.
Correct. Yes, exactly. Exactly. And I think a lot of solving these problems, it's almost like design thinking in a weird way. Not to like bring it way back, but
it's true though. It's true, because what we do requires so much thinking.
Yes, and problem solving. And when you're going through something like this, you're like, okay, like my marriage is erupting, or you know, I had a near death experience where I almost died on a vacation due to a flash flood that came through a canyon I was camping in. With some friends, and it was really, really scary. And the long and short of it was, like, outran an avalanche, had to climb a giant rock wall with like just a tiny little rope, and ran over a bridge and waded through sewage, and like ended up being helicoptered out of this place. And it took a long time and involved sleeping on the ground, and it was just a lot. And when I got home, I remember just being like, I'm probably fine now. I'm going to go for a run in the rain. And then it started raining and I panicked. And I'm like, oh. And I'm like, this is not fine. Why do I need a paper bag to breathe? Weird. And it occurred to me that I might have some post-traumatic stress. Oh, no.
Right.
And so I started talking to my therapist, and I'm like, is it normal that I can't work right now? Because I just can't make things with my hands, and I'm shaking a lot. And he's like, that's probably not good.
Right.
And so it causes you, when you're in these states of panic or in states of initial trauma, it's like a stroke where you just got to like let it run its course and see what's wrong, because you don't know the extent of the damage yet. So it means like sitting and being still. And then after that, you're kind of assessing like, okay, I've got to get curious, because I'm exhibiting these symptoms. I'm not able to do what I normally do. What does that mean? And so the internet becomes your friend, and you go for, you go on webmd.com for info. Or like, what are those, like the Elephant Journal or something?
From, right.
Yeah, that's because you're like, okay, I have to understand what's wrong with me. And then from there, you start going through your list of like coping mechanisms, and you're like, what's healthy? Like, being medicated in any way is not helpful. Like,
right,
journaling can possibly work, but my thoughts are all scrambled. Doing therapy might be helpful, but you have to go through this list of like, how can I solve this problem? And you're probably not going to solve it by doing something once. It's constant conditioning.
Right.
But I think eventually for me, given that particular situation of almost dying, I realized I had to travel again, because I was traveling for work and was having panic attacks on the airplane. And I thought, if this doesn't get fixed, I'm never going anywhere again. It's never going to happen. I just can't afford it. So I started looking into what that meant. And that meant that I was going to take a trip to somewhere I've always wanted to go. And I didn't feel comfortable doing it financially, but I just had to do it because I was like, I have to fix myself. And so I went to Iceland by myself for a week.
And wow.
Yeah. I drove all over the country. I took footage. I brought artwork with me and like filmed it in situ. And I made a video when I came home, and it felt so incredible. And one of the things I did while I was there, I went to see one of the waterfalls there, and initially I didn't think I was going to do that because this canyon episode I had involved a waterfall, and
it's just any hint of it, you're kind of like, ugh.
I was like, am I going to be triggered? And instead I was moved. And it was such a beautiful thing to be like coming home and feeling better after that. Yeah. It was really beautiful.
I think that probably like outside of literally all that you did to survive, like one of the coolest things is like your need to conquer this. I feel like so many other people, like, and it may not be something as severe as that, like you will have this symptom or you will go through this thing and you're like, you know what, I don't want any part of it again. Like, you're like, okay, I can't really fly because I'm having these panic attacks. I'm going to go fly more. Yeah. I'm gonna go do it. I'm gonna face it. Yes. And I feel like that is like so phenomenal, man. Like you are a woman. Like it's like no joke. I don't mean like just the, like so much strength, and it's very inspiring because I have no idea what it's like to actually be feeling like you're running for your life. You literally have to survive.
Yeah,
we may say we have no idea what that is.
It's a weird experience because at the time you're in this space of like writing your obituary in your brain, and then you're like, stop it, we don't have time for this. And then you go think of like, oh my god, this is like Indiana Jones, we're in an action movie, you guys. And you're screaming this, you're like, I shouldn't be screaming this, this is not helping anybody. And it's just that over and over and over until it's done.
Wow. Wow,
it's insane. And it's so funny, like through this process I started kind of connecting to my former last name. So I never legally changed my name to Evans, but that's the name that I've been using because I was like, at the time I was getting married and I'm like, I might as well just take it and I'll have this for a while, and whoops. But I started looking at my given last name, which is Duncan, and I learned that it meant dark warrior. And there was some part of that where I was like, I accept this.
Wow. It's like, yeah, we never really think about this. Like, there's like so much in our names.
Yeah.
So much in our names.
When you name a studio, it's kind of the same thing because you're like, oh, I'm taking a shot in the dark. This is interesting to me. And then years later, it starts to unfold.
It makes sense. It ties into everything that you're trying to do.
Yeah, exactly. Wow. And I think your name, like, eventually you do step into that in some capacity. And it's just, what does that look like? What does that mean? Yeah.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. All right. So after all of that heavy inspiration,
yes.
let's take it down and
right, let's get it back.
So currently, like, what is the first hour of Daniel's day like?
For me, I go journal. I tend to go to a couple different coffee shops and then like I find like 5 or 6 that I love. My city's very big on coffee, and I go sit there and I journal or I write. And so I'm getting to a point where I'm writing more because I've had these crazy experiences, and I think there's a lot to share, like a lot of value to mine out of those and give to other people. So I'm spending a lot of time doing that. And then on top of that, I like will read a little bit. I tend to read a lot and I share a lot of what I'm reading regularly. It's just so important if you're going to, I think if you're going to be a design focused person, and if you're going to be someone who values lettering, that additional things like the written word are very important.
Very.
Languages are very important, and figuring out different voices to imbibe and eventually put into your work are very important. So I see those sorts of things, and I'm reading all sorts of stuff. Like right now I'm reading Go Ahead in the Rain by Hanif Abdurraqib. He's
okay.
He's from Columbus, actually. So amazing book. And I happen to be reading They Can't Kill Us Until They Kill Us, which is his second book, while I was on my canyon fail trip. And I thought that was really ironic. So that's fun.
Like super ironic.
Yes. I met him in this once, and he's like, oh my god, I'm so sorry. And I'm like, no, it was very healing. Eventually, I had to take a break. But like, just getting music industry thoughts and black thoughts, and like just hearing other people from like the writing community or like from the music industry or from like various creative disciplines. That's really important to me, to get different voices into my own head, because it gives me more space for other people, strangely. And then I'll come back to my studio and either start editing something or build out a project or whatever. But it's funny, you would think you spend more time making, and really that's not quite true. You spend a lot less time making things and a lot more time like prepping, planning, baking, building, and just
focusing
the best.
That's true. That's true.
So I wish there was more time. But there are certain times throughout the year where I have interns or people that want to help, like apprenticeship things, and in which it's a lot easier to do that. So
yeah, that's cool.
Yeah.
Wow. So what is that thing that you can't live without or use the most that's not your phone?
Ooh, that's really hard to say. Oh jeez. That could be anything. I think regularly about what would happen if I lost my hand. I feel like I'd be, there's a part of me where I'm like, I could be the person that does the thing with their feet. Like, I'll make that work. I see people doing it all the time. Like, maybe I'll figure this out. But I do think about that. I'm like, the fact that my body is so integral to my job.
Right, right.
Like, even if I lost my sight, I could maybe figure something out. Maybe. It would be hard. Yeah, it would be hard.
It can be done, because a few people have done it.
Yes, exactly. Yes. Like, people make it happen, and I'm like, I will figure it out.
Right.
Yeah, so I mean...
So it's safe to say, are you saying that it's you?
Parts of me. Parts of me are integral. Others are like a body dump. Like, last week I sprained my ankle really, really badly, and I couldn't stand very well. I had my foot up, but at the same time I was over here like making my website work, and I'm like, had my foot up on my desk with some ice, and I'm like, I got this. Like, I'm still working, damn it. Like, it was.
So is it good now? Because you just said you went for a run.
It's good now. It was like a technically 3 weeks ago that I sprained this ankle. So okay. It's really good. But I did have a moment of like someone trying to call an ambulance for me, and I went, no, I work for myself, my insurance is really bad, don't. And then these strangers like, we can't just leave you there. Also, our premium's that bad right now. I'm like, yeah, mine's like $500. That was fun. We're just discussing health insurance and my ankle swelling up.
Right.
That is like, I can probe it in my purse. I'm like, I'll take your drugs. Okay, you look nice.
Oh gosh, that is funny. Give me another book recommendation, because you just named two that you have read. A couple books that you feel like influential, great books.
So I again tend to make connections between unrelated things. And for me, I'm still reading Brian Greene's The Elegant Universe. It's a really heavy book, but it's basically astrophysics and whatnot for dummies. Like, this guy is a brilliant physicist and finds a way to make this accessible to people who've never taken a physics course. And I have never been that involved in the sciences. But I realized there's a lot of philosophical things we can pull into the creative world. Like, he talks about what happens when you're in a vacuum. And if you have two astronauts that are passing each other in a vacuum, there's no stars, there's no light. It's just these two people just coasting, and they see each other and they're like, hey, you're trying to figure out who's moving, like which person is moving. And you start realizing that the only thing that affects how we move is our perception of contained space. So like time, energy, mass. Like, if you are an aunt, you're going to think that certain things are a certain way, not realizing that there are people stomping around all of you all the time. And then from there, like, we have obviously bigger entities swarming around us all the time, but we kind of ignore them because we're in our own little world.
Bubble, right.
And I think very much, like, the various industries and communities are like this. Like, designers are over here, lettering people are over here, like, people doing what I do are over here, and it's all just kind of like this. But when you start pulling back a little, you see how we're all affecting each other.
That is the truth.
Mm-hmm. It's very much a proximity thing. And I think, especially now that we're getting into, like, AR and VR and experience spaces, I think proximity is going to become such an important and integral piece of design, more than it ever has been, because a lot of proximity has been like, oh, the distance between things or the space between it are, don't get too close to art, you know, don't touch it. And everything now is becoming like, how do we get close to it? Like, how do we get into what we're looking at? How do we touch it and interact with it and get tactile? And I think that's really important.
Like, true.
I think that's going to change a lot in the next 5 to 10 years.
And that's true.
Start paying attention.
That's true. That's so true. That's true.
That's where that book takes me.
No, that's cool. I always like to hear, you know, other books, other from, you know, the self-help and the, nothing is wrong with those, but I feel like, because I'm a person that loves stories and love perspectives, I feel like just my best connection with even a project or creating something is usually from something that has nothing to do with design or nothing to do with what I'm currently trying to do or build. It's usually something on a complete other spectrum.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Because I think design, if you think about it, it's just structure. It's just rules. It's just some sort of hierarchy. In and of itself, design is nothing. It's supposed to be a solution. It's supposed to be a problem solve. And so if we get too into design for design's sake, it's really boring and abstract and everything looks the same. And so I think it's critical to bring non-design things into our design sphere and go, okay, like, this person's really invested in sports teams. They're really into basketball sports. Like, okay, let's see what we can do with that to make it more interesting. Like, how do we affect people while they're playing? Like, there are so many infinite questions that come from that. For me, bringing in food and objects in the natural world made a lot of sense because I'm like, again, these are metaphorical things. They speak to us in a different way. We need to start asking those questions of what that means.
Right.
And so I think as we start to pull influence, it's where stuff gets really good. It's where we start making a soup of something new. And so while I'm like tempting to be like, oh, let's, you know, I'm going to make design after this designer and I'm going to make design after them. We just like love how designy we all are. Ultimately, that's going to kind of kill the vibe. It's going to kill the good vibes. So it's about, again, perspectives and different people from different backgrounds and different like walks of life, seasoning that up and making it more interesting. Like, that to me is the kind of design I'm interested in.
Nice. So what's next for Daniel? What's next?
That's a great question. I don't completely know. I know I'm pushing myself a lot because I feel like I'm in a space where I'm more level and healthier. Like, I've been through a lot this year, and even in the last month, like, my grandmother dying, her funeral on my birthday, like, releasing a very personal article that had a lot of response. Like, it was just a lot of stuff. And I'm coming into a spot where I feel more like myself, where I'm able to think ahead and plot. And I am very interested in projects that are maybe more so multisensory. Like, my work visually, I've tried to induce multisensory experiences with people. Like, you look at something and you're like, oh, I can hear that sizzling, even though you can't hear it.
Right.
I can practically taste this, even though it's a photo. Whereas right now, I'm trying to be like, how do I incorporate sound? How do I incorporate touch in a way that multiple people can have these experiences, like multiple viewers, and have merely the same experience? That's very interesting to me. So
I'm with you. After doing this podcast for a while now, like, I'm thinking so much about sound.
Yeah.
Thinking so much about it, like how it can influence design. How can I implement it in what I'm doing? It's so I'm with you on that.
Yeah, and I think there's even ways to visually convey sound, but we're not really doing that. Like, we're not thinking about it. And I realized, who was it? Pentagram, I think, did something with MasterCard recently where they gave the brand a sound bite. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, we got to be thinking like this, you guys. It's time to start thinking about, like, what this means if we want to stay on the top of, like, the taste-making food chain. This is what we got to do. And I think that, yeah, that's exactly what we need to care about. Yeah.
It's funny. I was thinking about it. I was watching, like, some old, just old campaigns, how important jingles were back in the days.
Yeah.
Like, all of that stuff. Just really thinking about sound and how it was deeply implemented.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yes. Well, even, like, if you're watching a movie and you hear startup noise for the computer, you're like, I know exactly what computer that is. I don't even have to see it. I know. Yeah. Like, there are some brands that have integrated that completely, but they're mostly tech. And so I think there's going to come a point where, again, different objects are going to have noise. They're going to have a very distinctive visual texture. They're going to have other signifiers. And I think AR particularly is going to be ushering that in as it's more popular. So we'll see what that means. We'll see who that involves. But, yeah, that's what I think is going to happen.
Danielle, this has been amazing. Just, like, so much layers. I'm going to have to get you on again. It's up, like, so much layers, I'm telling you. Like, you are a legit powerhouse, right?
Thank you for saying that.
So, where can people go to find out about you, learn about what you're doing?
You can find me at several places. You can find me at marmaladeblue.com, or if you don't know how to spell that, mbleue.com will also get you there. Dimensionaltype.com, foodlettering.com, but I do have a Tumblr called foodtypography.com. All of those will lead you to me somehow. I have a couple side projects, kanyeg.com, which we didn't talk about, but Kanye quotes the lyrics out of Eggs. It's excellent. Let me see what else. Mean Trills. If you like the movie Mean Girls, I have asked a bunch of my plastics to come together to make various quotes from the movie. Let me see. I think you can find me on Instagram, Twitter, Dribbble, Spotify, all at Marmalade Blue. Again, blue is BLEUE. And you can find me on Medium, writing a lot, at MBlue. So, I think that's everything. I'm everywhere.
And it will all be in the show notes. And definitely, Danielle's going to send me some of these links.
Yeah. I'm going to send you links for like 2 hours.
Oh, man. This has been amazing. Just so much to share, so much levels, and just constant falling and rising. And I think that's probably the greatest thing that we can offer to people, the ability to show ourselves when we were down and show ourselves rising out of it.
That's very true. I saw a movie, I guess, to round this out. It wasn't a great movie, but it did have the most amazing quote at the end, where sometimes it says, life knocks us low and we fall further than we think is possible, than what we want, but the idea is to stand up a little bit taller when you get back up. Yeah.
Facts.
Like, I cried.
Facts. Well, Danielle, thanks again for doing this.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me, Daryl. It was great.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode. I hope it's been super valuable to you and you're now ready to take your audience building, your community growing to the next level to help you and help me build our empire, for lack of a better word, or just to build our thing. Remember to stop by iTunes, Passion Behind the Art, and leave a review and subscribe. It's very important to me. It helps the podcast grow, and it makes me feel good to kind of hear from you guys, to know what you like about this podcast, what it's done for you. So jump on iTunes and subscribe and leave a review. Passion Behind the Art. Be blessed.